away.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, and I'm talking about a guy who needed help, but I think maybe threw in the towel, and none other, of course, than Alex Jones. And given everyone knows my deep involvement in this, and how often my name is being taken in vain during this trial, it will come as no surprise that I want to share with you, like, five or six different takes on Alex Jones, and they'll open the lines and get your tag. Let's begin with something like the quasi-official narrative from more or less mainstream journalists. During Alex Jones' trial, awards $45 million more to Sandy Hook parents. The jury reached a decision on punitive damages a day after awarding more than $4 million in compensatory damages to the parents of a child killed in the 2012 Sandy Hook school shootings, which Mr. Jones has called a hoax. For context, the more than $49 million in total damages Jones has been ordered to pay is roughly 75% of the nearly $65 million InfoWars had in revenue last year. Earlier this year, a jury in California ordered Bill Cosby to pay $500,000 in compensatory damages, but no punitive, to a woman he was found to have sexually assaulted decades earlier. In Virginia, a jury awarded Johnny Depp $15 million in compensatory and punitive damages, caps required by state law, caused the total to drop to 10.35. But Amber Heard was awarded $2 million in compensatory damages in response to the ex-spouse's dueling defamation claims. Now, working a bit backwards from the event, these are comments now from Elizabeth Williamson, who's published a disgraceful book about the Alex Jones and my trial, where she claimed, for example, that I had no evidence to support my case, when in fact the judge simply set it all aside, where Wisconsin has this bizarre summary judgment procedure that allows a judge to exercise his own subjective opinion about what is reasonable and not reasonable. And even set the reports of two forensic document examiners who supported me aside as someone else's opinion. I mean, this is incredible. and where my case, my appeal, has now made its way before the United States Supreme Court, and I will learn on October 3rd whether or not they're going to actually hear the case. Here are some of her comments. The judge just left, and Mark Bankston, a lawyer for Mr. Heslin, Ms. Lewis, erupted, "I'll take it." The parents are staying for photos in front of the bench. Lawyers hugging them. Ms. Lewis, for the photo, forms a heart with her hands. The judge informs the parties that another damages trial against Mr. Jones is set for September 14th. Plaintiffs in that trial are Lenny Posner and Veronique Della Rosa, parents of Noah Posner, the youngest Sandy Hook victim. Judge says she thought the lawyers had already surrendered the contents of Alex Jones' foam to the authorities. This is important. The judge says she's not preventing the Sandy Hook lawyers from giving Jones' text messages to law enforcement in the January 6th House Committee. The judge acknowledges Reynolds' objection, adding that in Texas, the laws capping punitive damages imply we don't trust our juries. Jones' lawyers objecting, saying the verdict does not comply with the law, which in Texas limits the actual award to $750,000 per plaintiff, so a total of $1.5 for Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis. Total punitive damage is $45.2 million, a big number. The chair is relaying the verdict to Judge Mia Garen Gamble. The jury is back. Worth bearing in mind. This is the first of three trials for damages against Mr. Jones. Two more are scheduled for next month, one in Texas and one brought by the families of eight victims in Connecticut. Our laws governing damage favor the plaintiffs more than in Texas, and of course, Connecticut is where the shooting occurred. Punitive damages are designed as a deterrent, and as the name implies, punishment of Jones for defaming Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis, parents of Jesse Lewis, six, killed at Sandy Hook. Yesterday's damages were compensatory, meaning to compensate the family for actual costs incurred as a result of Jones's defamatory claims. Well, let me offer a few observations about what you've already heard there, and then turn to my take, but I have several others I'm going to share with you. I sought to intervene. I submitted motions to intervene in all three of these Alex Jones trials, also in the Remington case. In every single instance, I was opposed. My motion to intervene was predicated on the observation that there has been no judicial determination that anybody died at Sandy Hook. It's never been addressed in a court of law. They cite cases such as Jones versus Heslin. They cite cases like Soda versus Bushmaster. And now they can even cite the Alex Jones case. But in none of these instances was a question whether anybody died at Sandy Hook ever dealt with. It was never resolved, never even addressed. All of these trials have been resolved on the basis of procedural matters. None of them has been devoted to establishing whether or not anybody died at Sandy Hook. Mine was the one that had the greatest potential. And the court, the judge, simply ruled that my evidence that nobody died at Sandy Hook. I mean, really, I've got a 440-page book. I brought together 13 experts, including six PhDs. We established the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students or teachers there, that it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. We even have a FEMA manual. The judge at the scheduling conference ruled that I would not be allowed to present that defense, that we're not going down that rabbit hole, the defense that nobody died at Sandy Hook, which he claimed was irrelevant to the accuracy of the truthfulness of the death certificate, in spite of the fact that the death certificate in question was for an alleged decedent who died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012. Of multiple gunshot wounds. Think about it. How can evidence that nobody died at Sandy Hook not be relevant to a death certificate alleging somebody died at Sandy Hook, to wit, Noah Posner? Now, I'm enjoined from talking in detail about this. I'm only explaining to you what my lawsuit was all about. This was one of many of the aspects that I regard as completely inappropriate, even legally absurd. When I brought, for example, in my original answer, I was disputing the identity of the figure who had come and presented himself as Leonard Posner on the ground that I was convinced it was somebody else impersonating Leonard Posner to win an individual by the name of Reuben Fabner. And now you've heard Leonard Posner is going to show up in Connecticut with Veronique De La Rosa. Well, I have reason to believe Leonard Posner, a.k.a. whose real name is Reuben Fabner, is not and was never married to Veronique De La Rosa. I also have reason to believe that Reuben Fabner, who has three real children, Benjamin, Daniel, and Michael, but no one by the name of Noah, fabricated Noah Posner as a legal fiction out of photographs of his older, purportedly older half-brother, Michael Fabner, when he was a child. I have published about this again and again. I've given the proof. I introduced it into the proceeding, but the judge would not allow me to pursue it. When I wanted to get counterclaims, and normally you're allowed to pursue discovery on counterclaims at the same time this case in chief is moving forward. I had her counterclaims for abuse of process because this lawsuit against me was not brought for a proper purpose. This was brought to drag me into court, cause me a lot of financial expenses, drag it out, and find a pretext for blocking the downloading of the PDF of the book, which I'd released for free after Amazon.com had banned it back in 2015. They were trying to find a pretext. So I wasn't allowed to introduce any of that evidence or to pursue my counterclaims for abuse of process, for fraud and theft by deception, because as I spelled out there, the Sandy Hook parents were pretending to have lost children at Sandy Hook and gathering vast sums of money, by my calculation, between $27 and $130 million from sympathetic but gullible Americans, which divided by 26 surviving family works out at between $1 and $5 million for pretending to have lost a child at Sandy Hook. A lot of Americans would go along with that. And by the way, I'm convinced all these families were synthetic. They were put together. Many of them have never even met one another. It's all outrageous. My best guess is that there are only two of the Sandy Hook parents who are actually even married. Those are the Kowalskis and the D'Amatos. The rest are not even married. Now, you would think if a defense counsel were actually going into this, they'd want to look into the background of the plaintiffs in this case. But the whole thing has been a sham, a complete sham. So I published on my blog, Alex Jones calls out murder of due process at the Sandy Hook show trial. I mean, really, truly, I published a blog about it, and I think that they went a little bananas trying to deal with what I was publishing. I began this particular blog as follows, and this was published on 27 July. Alex Jones appears to be getting the same treatment I received in the lawsuit brought against me by the man who calls himself Leonard Posner, whom I am convinced is a legal fiction played by Reuben Fabner, who came to Madison and testified under oath. Everything about my trial was wrong, as I explained in detail below. Now they are taking my blog on Thursday. That would be the 20th at 5 p.m. Actually, they got the jump on the gun. They took it at 11 a.m., to make sure that I'm unable to contribute to explaining what's going on here and how the law has been weaponized to censor and abuse those who speak out about false flags or staged events, where we have had a spate of them of late with Buffalo, Uvalde, and most recently Highland Park. Download the law enforcement false flag staged event checklist I published with Brian Davidson, PI, and you will see a massive effort that's being exerted to deceive and mislead the American people, especially to give up their guns. Don't do it. Well, I published a second also about the parents at Sandy Hook, where I made a number of rather telling observations about what's going on here, including that the photograph, you know, sent around the world what appears to be an evacuation of the children from the shooting taking place, was a staged photograph. Shannon Hicks, who's a Newtown photojournalist, has explained that she acknowledged that she took both of these photographs, one taken a few minutes earlier, I'd estimate perhaps 5 minutes earlier, shows a group of parents there casually looking on, arms folded, hands in their pockets. There's even a group of three women in the background just casually looking on, leading me to refer to this photograph as lounging at the massacre. They're rearranging the kids to get a better shot. So they take boy number one, move him up to the front, a little girl in a pink sweater and a short skirt. They move her back. I mean, it's just amazing what was going on there. Remember, if any material aspect of this is fraudulent, the whole thing is fraudulent. Believe me, this whole thing is fraudulent, which is why they had to move so aggressively to take my blog. Now, Neil Haslund claims that he held his dying son, Jesse, in his arms. Well, that's a very poignant story, right? But it's just a story. It's bullshit. The fact is that Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, gave a press conference through which he declared that none of the parents were allowed to have contact with their children. In fact, the story is so absurd that they left the kids inside the school until removing them in the middle of the night. I mean, this is just a fantasy. By the way, Brian Davidson has proven himself brilliantly adept at doing internet research, even on photographs. I'll say more about it. But he's got into the Connecticut State Police photographic archive and has found photographs of the hallway where two deceased were supposed to be located, and it's perfectly clear there's no blood in the classroom tent, perfectly clear, no blood, no pockmarks in the wall. But they did fake the windows at classroom 10. They drilled holes in the aluminum frame and inserted pink rods, all of which are exactly parallel to one another and 90 degrees to the window pane. Just ridiculous. So, as I observe in my petition to the United States Supreme Court, that the Fourth Court of Appeals affirmed all the rulings of the lower court, meaning the circuit court, and concluded in their 58-page opinion on March 18, 2021, that there were no reasonable disputed facts in this case. Remember, in Wisconsin, the judge is allowed to exercise his discretion as to whether facts are or are not reasonable. Now, in a normal summary judgment, such as practice in Texas, which I use as my contrast case, the court would take all of the assertions of the plaintiff, of the defendant, namely, in this case, me. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control. There was a sign that everyone must check in. We got the FEMA manual, FBI consolidated crime report, a chart showing zero deaths or non-negligent manslaughters in Newtown for 2012. You'd have to take all that to be true and then ask the plaintiff bringing the lawsuit, known as a move-in, whether he agreed with all those facts. And only if he agreed with all those facts would there then be no disputed facts. But obviously, in this case, he couldn't agree with those facts. He's asserting the opposite. So the judge at the circuit court level and at the appellate level just took for granted the official account. And here is actually from the appellate court's decision, rejecting my appeal. There is no reasonable dispute regarding the following facts. On December 14, 2012, a mass shooting occurred at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. Tragically, 26 people were killed, including six staff members and 20 children who were age 6 and 7. See, Jones v. Heslin. Stating, Neil Heslin's son was killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting on December 2012, rejecting the substantial truth doctrine as a basis to dismiss that he held his deceased son in his arms, Soto v. Bushmaster, which cites, on December 14, 2012, 20-year-old Adam Lanza forced his way into Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown and, during the course of 264 seconds, fatally shot 20 first-grade children and six staff members and wounded two other staff members. Posner's 6-year-old son, Ian, was one of the children killed during the Sandy Hook shooting. Now, is anything preposterous about that that strikes you right between the eyes? During the course of 264 seconds? Where they have someone there with a stopwatch who was timing the number of shots, who knew when to start before the first shot had been fired? I mean, this is just absurd. We had similarly in Buffalo. The Buffalo event was modeled after New Zealand. You had the perp driving around in a car. He had a painted-up gun. It was a fake gun. It didn't eject any cartridge casings. There was a black guy there who claimed he'd had a conversation with the alleged shooter, who, mind you, is supposed to be a white supremacist the day before. And they conversed for an hour. And he said he bought him a Gatorade, and they talked about critical race theory, as Scorpio observed when we discussed this. What self-respecting white supremacist is going to talk for a black guy for an hour about critical race theory? I mean, it's absurd on his face. Well, get this. After the shooting, the black guy said he was there, heard the shots, and he said the second shot occurred 1.7 seconds after the first. Think about it. The second shot occurred 1.7. What are they telling us? I mean, this is just absurd. So, which was it? Either Wayne Carver was lying about his about the parents not being able to see their kids, or Neil Heslin has been lying about holding Jesse in his arms as he died. They cannot both be true. But bear in mind, they could both be false, which appears to be the case. Alex Jones cannot be guilty of defamation by denying that Neil Heslin held his son, his dying son, in his arms, as long as that is true. And even Wayne Carver supports the conclusion that Alex had it right. By the way, we're going to learn Alex never even cited any of these people by name. How can you commit a defamation if you don't cite any of the parties by name? Meanwhile, I continue. Editor's note, while I'm legally constrained from addressing issues related to Noah Posner, perhaps the single most in relation to the death certificate question, perhaps the single most important proof that Sandy Hook was a FEMA exercise presented as mass murder to promote gun control is a photograph showing a crime scene vehicle in the parking lot. We will find the flag at full mast, areas isolated with crime scene tape, and a figure who appears to be Wayne Carver, MD, reclining against a wall, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent. But take a close look at the windows of Classroom 10, which are intact. After the event, they would be shown as shot out, especially the second from the left. So this photo was taken either before the event had taken place or before they had completed fabricating evidence. Either way, it may be the single most damning photo exposing the charade. Brian Davidson, PI, tracked it down to a magazine where it was published and then to the photographic archives of the Connecticut State Police, who were apparently running the event behind the scenes. As proof of consciousness of guilt, they have removed metadata from the Sandy Hook photographs. Get that. They have removed the metadata. That means you cannot prove where and when they were taken by the Connecticut State Police. You think they don't know that removing the metadata means they're no longer admissible in a court of law? But some of them, like this one, in my opinion, is self-certifying. Because you have the windows of Classroom 10 not shut out. I have elsewhere, other places, you know, shown exactly what they would have looked like and what they and before and after. And this is clearly before they've damaged the windows of Classroom 10 to comport with the official story. But they're already there. They already have crime scene tape up. So, I mean, once again, you have proof. It's just like discovering that the evacuation photograph was staged because we have an earlier photograph showing parents present. No one is showing any anxiety. I mean, for crying out loud, if you were there as a parent, you'd grab your kid and get the hell out of Dodge. You wouldn't hang around with your arms folded, casually looking on. I mean, this is just insulting and embarrassing. Now, there's a completely brilliant guy by the name of Robert Barnes, who's been commenting on the case and who's done a pretty fascinating job with a colleague. So I want to play part of what his take is about the Sandy Hook trial when we get back from the break. But they were so eager to get down my blog because once they started trashing me during the Alex Jones trial, they realized people would want to know who the hell is this guy. They were describing as batshit crazy. Who the hell is this guy? What's he got to say? So they had to take down my blog, and they did it. In my opinion, it was completely wrongful that this took place. But they had an order from the court that transferred my interest in these matters in my blog and even a book to Leonard Posner. And he was able to induce Namecheap to transfer it to him, and now it the original jamesfetzer.org takes you to court documents related to this effort to taking. For today, I'm filing my replies to their objections. We'll be right back.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Mitchell will let me know if the sound isn't going out, but I think I got it set right. Here are some thoughts from Robert Barnes, whom I regarded as a pretty smart guy, but I'm getting also reports that maybe not as smart as I thought. Listen to part of this.
Reflected that prejudice perfectly. It's because his opinion is not based on facts. His opinion is not based on learned understanding of the law or the relevant applicable constitutional provisions. It's based on bias, bigotry, prejudice, and parochialism. And what he doesn't realize is if they can do it to Alex Jones, then they can do it to Alex Berenson, and they can do it to anybody else, because their legal theory is extraordinary. And what they've done is they've stripped him of his ability to present a defense. I'll give other examples as we transition to Alex Jones's case. In Texas law, an apology is mitigation of damages under Texas law. We went through it a little bit on one of our live streams during the week. The judge told the jury exactly the opposite. Not only that, in order to seek punitive damages, you have to make a timely request under Texas law. To my knowledge, the plaintiffs never did. Yet somehow, punitive damages are back in the case. Yet somehow, Jones is not allowed to talk about his apology. In fact, what became clear is we're supposed to be having a trial just on damages. Damages is the plaintiffs get up and say, I heard Alex Jones say these things. It caused me this kind of emotional pain. Here's the proof of that emotional pain. Here's why I'm asking for X amount. That's all it is, because the punitive damages is separate. It's not part of this. It's part of this trial, but it's not part of this part of the jury trial. It has to be separated because they don't want one piece of evidence to inflame another piece of evidence. And so what they're doing is the plaintiffs are combining the two because they want the damages as emotional distress, because in Texas, punitive damages are capped at $3 million. So they want $150 million to be emotional distress damages, not punitive damages, because then they're not capped. And so the so that's all supposed to be happening. Anybody who watched the trial this week heard almost none of that. Instead, the judge is allowing them, even though she's defaulted Alex Jones and this trial is supposed to be just on damages, she's allowing the plaintiffs to present their merits case as if that hasn't, well, but not allowing Jones to defend himself. And the reason is, it's not only a show trial, it's literally a show trial. I was in the courtroom, the plaintiff's lawyer started hopping around like a bunny rabbit, going, Bobby Barnes, Bobby Barnes, Bobby Barnes. The guy's nuts. The guy's a loon. I gotta put him on my straitjacket for Christmas list. So they are so obsessed, they had Owen Schroyer, you know, Robert Barnes is here in the courtroom. I mean, these people are berserk. It tells you how much they're obsessed about the court of public opinion. But I was sitting there, I was stunned. I'd never seen this before. There are three movie cameras in the room. And not only are there three movie cameras, one of them is staring down the jury. This is literally made for movies. This is a show trial for a show, literally for a show. They are staging this trial for a show to be on Netflix or HBO, wherever it's going to be. I believe it's the Leaving Neverland production company that did a hit piece on Michael Jackson that they could get away with because he's dead. Now, how do they get away with it here? By presenting all of these things within the courtroom, and they are completely immune. Now, let's say the judge allowed Alex Jones to present a defense on the merits. Then they have to include that in their movie. They don't have to, as long as it's not presented. So they have complete legal immunity for allowing the lies about Alex Jones from the courtroom to be repeated later on and cannot be sued because they're just republishing what was in court. That's why the judge is literally doing a show trial for a show.
And you know what? It makes so much more sense now in retrospect. Kierkegaard, life can only be lived forwards but understood backwards, where she asked Karpova, do you think this is a show trial? Do you think any part of this trial is a show trial?
Staged.
And it's a staged event, something along those lines. And yep. It makes sense now because in her heart of hearts, she knows it's entirely staged, literally yeah. So, with the camp. But Robert, this is the question. What case against Jones was presented?
They're presenting kind of a mythical case. So they're presenting experts that aren't experts in things, like their fact-checking information expert was talking about how PolitiFact and Snopes are so reliable. I mean, you know, that CNN is a beacon of independence and integrity and independent journalism in America. This was being presented in the trial as evidence. And the goal is to say, this is what a jury concluded. When the evidence was presented, liberal news is very reliable and trustworthy. Alex Jones and everybody else are all terrible, horrible liars. That's the whole point of this whole case, other than bankrupting Jones and trying to take him off the air. That's almost secondary. The goal is to script a broader narrative for a broader show to be utilized as future legal precedent and court of public opinion precedent going forward. And that's why the case, if Alex Berenson's eyes were open, would realize this case is very dangerous. And they pick Alex Jones and they pick Sandy Hook because nobody wants to defend Alex Jones or get involved in Sandy Hook. That's why they pick those. They always start off this way. When they want to make bad law, bad precedent, and bad policy, they start with controversial targets that people with any degree of influence are scared and terrified and hide under their desks rather than publicly defend. And they're enraged. People like Berenson are enraged that people like me are defending it. That's why he has to call me scum. That's why he has to call me disgusting. That's why he has to threaten to sue me. All that did is remind me, hey, maybe I should double check whether Alex Berenson defrauded his donors. You know, if you're going to come at me, you better be ready to come at me.
The one thing, though, the judgment by default came from the judge. It didn't go to a jury by default, right. So no jury heard evidence. The judge basically said, it's almost like I'm taking for granted all of the evidence such that you don't even have to present it. So
it is even allowing the plaintiffs to flagrantly violate Texas law. All of a sudden, apologies can't come in. All of a sudden, you do get punitive damages. All these things that you can't get under Texas law, given how the plaintiffs behaved leading up to the case. So she's just gutting all of the laws, gutted the anti-SLAPP law, gutted all of it, gutted the constitutional requirement of colloquium. Because, I mean, you remember from the questions asked in the deposition that you covered, his questions, 90% of them weren't about specific statements about Sandy Hook, about the parents. It was statements like, don't you recognize that questioning who committed the murder it could be offensive to people who are related to the victims? I was like, holy cow, you could criminalize the Kennedy assassination conspiracy theorist on these grounds. You could ban everybody. Anybody who's in this a safe space, and they've expanded that space, by the way. There's people that have no relationship to the Sandy Hook families that are bringing suit in Connecticut. They have none. They're just FBI agents and other agents who are there at the scene. So, I mean, they're saying anybody who's emotionally damaged by your offensive opinion about a topic the government disagrees with you on. So that's their core theory. And what we saw all week was just liberal news good, Alex Jones bad. We saw the other thing is they actually called what Alex Jones did altered clips, which is not the case. He's actually presenting clips that are unaltered on doc. Interpretation is that a clip, by definition, is altering the film. All they have presented the entire trial, by their definition, is altered clips because they won't allow the whole film to come in.
Yeah, and just to contextualize that for everybody watching. They wanted to play segments of episodes. And they said, well, if you play a clip, that's altering the video. And they said, that's not altering the video. I'm just playing an unaltered clip. Otherwise, what are we going to do? Play every entire video in its entirety because we can't play a clip for a specific section? And the judge wouldn't allow...
But they wouldn't allow the defense to present it allows the plaintiff to criticize Alex Jones forever playing a clip, while all they have done is played clips out of context. And they had said before trial, at least the understanding defense counsel was, that they were going to get to play all the video. And what do we mean by all the video? In other words, the whole segment on his discussion about Sandy Hook as a topic. So you don't take 30 seconds out of it. You don't take 2 minutes out of it. You look at the whole 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 minutes, 30 minutes, however long it is. She's not allowing that. Because again, if that was presented, the film crew would have to reproduce it because they would no longer have judicial immunity extended to them because they would not have been fair, neutral reporting of what took place in court. That's the requirement for the immunity to apply. So by excluding that, she's allowing them to take, and they're basically, she's allowing the myth to be told as truth in court so it can be repeated forever. The myth being, they're actually repeating this, that Alex Jones is solely responsible for anyone questioning Sandy Hook. Utterly false. That Alex Jones originated, initiated, instigated, and controlled what people believed about Sandy Hook. Utterly false. They're actually, I mean, here you had half the jury pool didn't know who Alex Jones was, but supposedly 75 million Americans don't think Sandy Hook happened because of Alex Jones.
Robert, I mean, if anybody...
It's a lie. It's a lie the judge is allowing to be told by the lying plaintiff's lawyers and the court because they want that lie repeated to the world forever. And Alex Berenson is happy to preach and propagate that lie, either because he's too lazy to do his job or because he's more of a deep state hack than he is a real independent researcher. That's why Robert Malone called him control.
That's really quite brilliant, in my opinion. I think Robert Barnes has it right. So that's a third take on what's going on. Now, here's a fourth. You've often heard me cite John Rappaport, who has been so brilliant about the corona pandemic. Now they took 38 million cases of the flu and then reclassified all but 2,000 as coronavirus the following year. So what happened to 27,998,000 cases of the flu? He published this, Lou Rockwell republished, Know These Things About Alex Jones, where Lou Rockwell has a very important, very widely read blog. John Rappaport, let's start here. While Jones was supporting Trump, he also mercilessly attacked the horrifically destructive COVID vaccines. In the process, he forcefully awakened millions of Trump followers to a truth they were unaware of or didn't want to face. In the process, lives were saved. Decades ago, long before it was fashionable to do so, Jones explained and righteously attacked globalism, the Rockefeller Empire, and the designs of the Chinese regime. Perceived by the public as living on the political right, Jones confounded that perception by attacking both big government and big corporations, while so-called conservatives were routinely and conveniently letting criminal corporations off the hook. About 20 years ago, the day after George Norrie interviewed me about those corporations, Jones called me out of the blue and insisted I come on his radio show and talk about the subject at length. Very early in his radio career, he saw the gathering clouds of medical dictatorship on the horizon and spoke about it compellingly. His audience got a strong dose of something they'd never thought about: toxic pesticide, GMO crops. Jones contributed as much to the public understanding these issues as any dyed-in-the-wool environmentalist. However, for years, he's also spoken about the psychopathic anti-human elitists who use the environmental movement as a front for a green revolution that aims to capture humanity in an endless future of poverty. No one has done more to expose the predatory adults who guide and groom young children for transgender medical and psychological destruction. Since the beginning of his career, he's defended the constitutional right of citizens to own guns against the deluded crowd who claim that taking away all those guns from everybody would lead us into an era of tranquility. Millions of non-criminal gun owners owe Jones a debt of gratitude. Every day, Jones refuses to let the idea of the original American Republic die. Try that yourself. See how much energy it takes. I could go on and list a number of other vital issues on which he has led the way. He's inspired many people to start their own independent news outlets as they watched him make his visible. In a materialistic age, he has a vision of the human soul. And whether you agree with it or not, it is not a slave to government and corporate and media and church propagandas. If the meaning of the soul sounds like a harmless position to take, it isn't when you're connecting with large numbers of people for hours every day, and those propagandists want to shut off your connection and force you to go down to defeat. For more than 20 years without let-up, Jones has not only defended the First Amendment to the hilt, he has stood on it to speak freely about a blizzard of issues, and now this has brought him into courtrooms where civil suits have been leveled against him. Regardless of the outcomes of the cases, I trust he will survive and carry on. He's already run many victories during his career, and they will stand. As for the public, there will always be those who go after Jones. There will always be whiners and screamers and critics who devote their whole lives to finding someone to pick at and scrape at while they studiously ignore the good that person has achieved. They feed on the bounty of the First Amendment like parasites and never have the courage to see a better world and fight for it. Anyone who rises above the crowd is their target because they are the crowd, gnawing their way to oblivion. So be it. The world has its disgusting creatures. Alex Jones was and is a pioneer. He can handle it. He has for a long time, and in the process, he's made many other people open their eyes and see they can too. That's the rub. When dedicated tyrants notice the contagion of courage, they panic. They look for a source. Years and years ago, they honed in on Jones, but he's endured because he and his work are built for the storm. Well, there's a fourth. Here's a fifth take. This is from the INIWorldReport.org musings for August 2022. Pat Shannon writes, "My guess this month is Michael Baxter wrote almost everything that I would have regarding this case. His report is right on, and we are witnessing the murder of the First Amendment." Deep state slams free speech pioneer Alex Jones. My thoughts, Michael Baxter. In Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter asked Clarice Starling of the killer Buffalo Bill, "What does he do, this man you seek?" To which Starling answers ascertainably, "He kills women." "No," Lecter replies emphatically, "that is incidental," and points out that Bill's killings are merely a byproduct of his true yearning to covet. Alex Jones was incidental, an incidental casualty in the deep state's war on free speech, its covetous desire to silence all discussion that contradicts White House talking points and the dogmatic view of mainstream media. The farcical trial was never about Alex Jones, not really, and certainly not Sandy Hook. It could have been you or me. But Jones, the biggest and wealthiest kid in the room, made an appetizing target. His fame and influence in the free speech community put crosshairs on his back, of which he was aware. In prosecuting Jones, the deep state delivered an unadulterated message to persons who dare question official narratives. No longer will we simply cancel and deplatform you. We'll sue you into bankruptcy and poverty. The deep state's case against Jones was open and shut. He was found guilty even before setting foot in a courtroom. He wasn't leaving court unscathed. Even if Jones' horrible legal representation had magically produced evidence, a smoking gun, that plainly and unequivocally proved beyond all other exclusions that crisis actors were used as Sandy Hook, the court would still have found him liable for damages. I've seen articles trouncing Jones's defense team, and yes, his lawyers were among the most incompetent lawyers imaginable. What defense attorney with his salt accidentally sends a prosecution privilege information? In the end, though, Jones could have hired OJ's dream team and still be found guilty, not because he committed a crime, but because of the cacophonous message that now reverberates through the free speech community. The deep state, the liberal lunatics, and the woke masses will tolerate no dissension. Conform or else. Don't question the authority. For Jones, the most immediate authorities were a slanderous prosecutor and the most biased judge in the history of the American legal system. They worked as a team, playing off each other while overruling almost every objection raised by Jones' lawyers. The prosecution was allowed to enter into evidence statements made Jones made opposing COVID-19 lockdowns. How exactly does COVID relate to Sandy Hook? Jones' lawyers asked that question, but were shut down by a deep state judge. In short, Jones was wrongly maligned for practicing his constitutionally protected right to free speech. He expressed opinions and views, and he certainly didn't kill anyone in Sandy Hook. I hope a court of appeals nullifies a judgment against him, but I'm not holding my breath, and neither should Alex. It was mentioned there, by the way, of crisis actors. A crisis actor is anyone who feigns or pretends to be other than they are for the sake of a political event, such as Sandy Hook in this case, and we have abundant crisis actors by that definition. Alex, to my knowledge, was very nonspecific in talking about these figures, but it's pretty clear already that this those who were involved here qualified. One of the most famous was David Wheeler, who not only played the role of a grieving father, but also of a SWAT team member walking up and down Dickinson Drive, carrying an AR-15 upside down by the magazine. Now, David Wheeler, you may not know, actually has acting credits. I mean, real acting credits, as does his wife, Francine, who even played the voice of an a character in an animated pornography production, believe it or not. You can look them up as members of Screen Actors Guild. They have their cards. And I say, as a former Marine Corps officer who used to supervise recruit training, with 15 DIs and 300 recruits going through the train cycle, including marksmanship training, even the lowest-ranking private would be no better than to carry a weapon upside down by the magazine. The magazines are designed to be easily and quickly removable. Carrying a weapon upside down, you're almost certainly going to cause a weapon to fall to the ground, potentially damaging the sights or other parts. I mean, it's ridiculous. Here's another crisis actor, Gene Rosen. Gene Rosen claimed that a bus driver, depending on the telling, dropped off 4 or 5 or 6 different kids at his home, and he took them inside, and they drank orange juice and played with stuffed animals until they calmed down enough to tell him their teacher was dead. Well, what was Gene Rosen doing with stuffed animals in the first place? But notice, no bus driver is going to... Gene Rosen was not the parent or custodian of any of those kids. What bus driver is going to drop off kids at the home of someone who's not their parent or custodian. And Gene Rosen has acting credits, too. Not only that, but the very idea of a bus driver is absurd. Dean Dickinson Drive, the only entrance and exit, was so clogged you couldn't have got a bus in or out there. In fact, there were allegedly 489 students at school that day, according to Stephen Sadansky III. Dansville State Attorney wrote the final report on Sandy Hook, subtract 2,469 to be evacuated. That would have taken quite a massive string of buses, 469 if you figure it out. 15, 20 buses. But the police claimed an evacuation took place at specific locations, but we have dash cam footage for those locations and times, and there's no evacuation taking place. We're told you can't prove a negative, but you can prove there's no elephant in your living room by going to the living room and looking for signs of the presence of elephant, finding none. You're entitled to infer that's because there's no elephant there. If you go to the times and location where evacuation is supposed to be taking place and there are no signs of an evacuation taking place, you're entitled to infer that's because no evacuation was taking place. This whole trial is a complete sham. Robert Barnes has nailed it. This is a made-for-television production. The judge appears to be completely off the rails here. Stunning, stunning stuff. I have one more response to share with you, coming from a rather august organization, the United Nations. You're going to be appalled. We're on the verge of the break. I'm going to take your calls after I discuss the United Nations, so stand by. I'm looking forward to hearing from you for your take on Alex Jones and what the hell has been going on here, because this is anything but a normal trial. This is anything but a legitimate courtroom procedure. Something very, very weird is going on. And I think you know enough to put the pieces together at this point in time. We'll be right back after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I've had a listener email me and ask about Robert Barnes' take on what happened at Sandy Hook, and I was astonished to hear him say that he thought the shooting was real. So, I mean, what can I say? The guy's a brilliant attorney, but he seems to have missed a mark on this one. I mean, not just by a little, but by a lot. So here we have now another point of view. Get this. I mean, you think you were reading Mad Magazine. UN declares war on dangerous conspiracy theories. The world is not secretly manipulated by the global elite. Unbelievable. Editor's note. Because I publish this on my blog, too, now at James H. Fetzer, jameshfetzer.org. They took James Fetzer so the public, hearing my name taken in vain, wouldn't seek out the vast repository of information I have about Sandy Hook on my blog, jameshfetzer.org. So they took it. So just as they're describing me as this nut job, and they're being very vague, and you even have the attorney mangling the name of the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. You never hear him say the whole book with the title and subtitle, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control. They'll never even say that. They're certainly not mentioning where 13 contributors, including six PhDs. Editor's note about this piece, which I have published on my blog. Bullshit is bullshit, even when it comes from a source such as the UN. For antidotes to nonsense, check out my publications available online. Thinking about conspiracy theories, 9/11 and JFK, and what's wrong with the conspiracy theories? Then watch How to Spot a False Flag Part 1 and How to Spot a False Flag Part 2 and evaluate the evidence. This is an embarrassing development that all but discredits the UN as having a voice in international affairs. It has hereby discredited itself. The article continues. The United Nations had declared war on conspiracy theories, describing the rise of conspiracy thinking as worrying and dangerous, and providing the public with a toolkit to pre-bunk and debunk anybody who dares to suggest that world governments are anything but completely honest, upstanding, and transparent. The UN also warns that George Soros, the Rothschilds, and the State of Israel must not be linked to any alleged conspiracies. Get that. This is worth emphasizing. You can see where this is coming from. The UN also warns that George Soros, the Rothschilds, and the State of Israel must not be linked to any alleged conspiracy, for crying out loud. How about the conspiracies involving bombing the King David Hotel? How about the conspiracy of attacking the USS Liberty? How about the conspiracy of 9/11? For God's sake, those were all Israeli ops. UNESCO has teamed up with Twitter, the European Commission, and the World Jewish Congress, of course, to launch a campaign dubbed hashtag Think Before Sharing. Stop the spread of conspiracy theories. They're really telling you to stop thinking about complex and controversial events, just to believe anything the government tells you. The UN wants you to know that events are not secretly manipulated behind the scene by powerful forces with negative intent. And if you encounter anybody who thinks a global elite are conspiring to consolidate power and dictate global events, you must take action. According to UNESCO, if you are certain you have encountered a conspiracy theory on the internet, then you must react immediately. You must react immediately to doing so by fact-checking. You know, the reliable fact-checkers like Snopes. This is embarrassingly bad. Embarrassingly bad. Here's how they continue. Never mind the fact that fact-checkers are mostly untrained and unqualified hacks performing fact-checks from the comfort of their bedrooms in between posting far-left political content on personal blogs and getting high. Actually, I think a whole lot of them are played. You'll have whole teams of them either at the DOD or at the Langley who are constantly putting out comments on blogs, anything that discusses or questions a government narrative. Here's what the UN puts out. Conspiracy theories. What are they? Why do they flourish? Be warned. The COVID-19 pandemic has seen a rise in harmful and misleading conspiracy theories. It may be difficult to realize that, to recognize them, or know how best to deal with them. What are they? The belief that events are secretly manipulated behind the scenes by powerful forces with negative intent. Conspiracy theories have these six things in common. An alleged secret plot, a group of conspirators, evidence that seems to support the conspiracy theory. They falsely suggest that nothing happens by accident, that there are no coincidences, nothing is as it appears, and everything is connected. They divide the world into good or bad. They scapegoat people and groups. Why do they flourish? They offer an explanation of events or situations where they're difficult to understand and bring a false sense of control and agency. This need is highlighted in times of uncertainty, like the COVID-19 pandemic. How do they take root? Conspiracy theories often start as a suspicion. They ask who is benefiting from the event or situation, and thus identify the conspirators. Any evidence is then forced to fit the theory. Once they have taken root, conspiracy theories can grow quickly. They are hard to refute because any person who tries is seen as being part of the conspiracy. Why do people spread them? There are different reasons. Most believe they are true. Others deliberately want to provoke, manipulate, or target people for political or financial reasons. Beware. They can come from many sources, for example, the internet, friends, or relatives. Well, by all means, believe UNESCO rather than you and a friend or a relative. My God. UNESCO also provides advice for anyone who encounters a real-life conspiracy theorist in the flesh. According to the UN agency, you must not under any circumstances be lured into an argument with a conspiracy theorist. Any argument may be taken as proof that you're part of the conspiracy and reinforce that belief. And the conspiracy theorists will probably argue hard to defend their beliefs. Yes, no doubt, because they have a mountain of evidence, and most of those who are not thinking about these matters have no idea and have never looked at any of the evidence. That's a great advantage. The message from the UN basically is, never look at any evidence for any conspiracy. Instead, you must show empathy. Avoid ridiculing them, and if you're a journalist, you must report them to social media or contact your local national press council or press ombudsman. Here's another. Conspiracy theories, concrete counteractions. If you are certain you have identified a conspiracy theory, react rather than ignore. Here are some concrete ways. On social media, comment with verified information from fact-checking websites, for example. Do not share the post. On websites and blogs, contact the author or the web manager with verified information and ask them to make corrections. Do not share the website or blog post. On media outlets, contact the editorial board. Contact your local national press council or press ombudsman. Do not share the material. Bear in mind, since the Rothschilds own the AP and the Reuters, and the vast majority of non-local news comes from the AP and Reuters, and that they control the mainstream media. Remember those panels I have of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Notice the message, do not share, do not share, do not share. In other words, they're trying to constrain information that would enlighten people, cause them to think about what's really going on. Remarkably, hidden in the fine print, UNESCO admits that conspiracy theories do exist. Under the heading, what is a real conspiracy? The United Nations bureaucrats explain that real conspiracies, large and small, do exist. According to the UN, however, it's only a real conspiracy theory if it's unearthed by the media. Notice how, therefore, there are virtually complete control of the media, everything but the alternative media, which they're here attacking, guarantees you get the right result, the preferred narrative. They are more often centered on single self-contained events or an individual, like an assassination or a coup d'etat. They are unearthed by whistleblowers in the media using verifiable facts and evidence. What is a real conspiracy? Look for a real conspiracy. In 2006, the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. ruled that major cigarette companies were guilty of conspiracy for decades. They had hidden evidence of health risks attached to smoking to promote higher sales. L.A. Times, 2006. There's just one problem with the U.N. definition of a real conspiracy theory. The media has been fully bought and paid for by the elite, and it's the elite who are conspiring against the masses. Ask yourself, when was the last time the media unearthed the conspiracy? Also ask yourself, when was the last time the media covered up one? I mean, really, give us a break. You're welcome to call 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. Here are a couple of comments from my blog. This seems like a satire, almost like forgetting you woke up on April 1st and started reading the faux headline of your local newspaper. When the Vail Daily did this one year, they got more going for a minute. This almost seems like that. Quoting, according to UNESCO, if you are certain you've encountered a conspiracy theory on the internet, then you must react immediately, post a relevant link to a fact-checking website in the comments. It reminds me of the Soros-elected Colorado Secretary of State, Janet Giswold, and her predecessor appearing on a fake book ad to tell us how safe, secure, and trustworthy our elections were right after they effed Tiny Peters out of the Republican nomination that she was leading by miles. They SWAT teamed her and hauled her away after she made forensic copies of the voter database before and after Dominion's trusted build update. You think they would have raided her had the images been identical? Here's another. It seems hardly worth commenting on such poppycock, except to say that the banning of conspiracy theories, aka spoiler alerts, is one more example of the desperation of Western elites in losing control. In all fairness, UNESCO and those other non-entities it's aligned with are not the same as the United Nations. Only the vote of the UN General Assembly, ironically often berating Israel, or that of the UN Security Council can be truly said to represent the view of the United Nations. The United Nations, as with other nations and global entities, has its own deep state bureaucratic infiltrators at UNESCO and other agencies that go about business on their own. But since four of the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, Russia, USA, France, Britain, represent only 7% of the world's population, even a UN Security Council vote doesn't necessarily represent the views of the world community at large. Interestingly, the UN didn't mention itself and its alleged occult symbolism as a favorite target in certain conspiracy circles. Let me add, my petition before the Supreme Court is going to a conference on the 28th of September, a conference where they make a final selection of which cases are to be heard and which are going to be denied. I've already passed through like 10 of the 12 steps in reaching a hearing before the Supreme Court. I will know by October 3rd whether or not my case is going to be actually heard by the court. I believe that because it represents a problem with summary judgment, because summary judgment is the abuse of summary judgment is the greatest problem confronting the American judiciary since they were introduced around 1957, as a retired professor of law has observed to me, he very much likes the petition. He believes they are going to react favorably, and so do I. And bear in mind, it may be that these defects surfaced because mine was a high-profile case involving Sandy Hook. But it's being abused again and again throughout Wisconsin. This is a standard Wisconsin methodology that deprives a plaintiff of their right to due process and their right to a trial by jury, because if there are disputed facts, then summary judgment cannot be applied. Then the resolution of those disputed facts must be sent to a jury. Since this has been happening throughout Wisconsin for decades now, the Supreme Court has the opportunity to set the record right not only in Wisconsin, but to standardize summary judgment procedures throughout the United States. Throughout the United States. I believe they're going to find it irresistible. Mitchell, whom I'd hope would be feeling calls, has been taken out by a storm. He's just allowed me to know. So it's really pretty damn interesting. We're not going to get comments I would have liked from callers, because there's so much going on here. I would have welcomed the opportunity. If anyone wants to send an email to jfetzer@d.umn.edu, then I can certainly do my best to feel that with you know, anything you write. Here we have one from James. I forgot to suggest George Soros, Carl Schwab, C. Legard, Bill Gates, etc. should be arrested. The takeover of the USA may have taken place by men protecting their financial empires over 100 years ago. And he's talking, of course, about the Federal Reserve. No doubt about it. He's talking about the Federal Reserve. Here you have CBS News censoring its own documentary, exposing how 70% of U.S. funding in Ukraine is wasted. Get this. CBS News, and this is coming from Paul Joseph Watson. What I find ironic is I've always had a positive opinion about Paul Joseph Watson. And then virtually right off the bat, when they had a Alex Jones producer in the chair who seemed to me to be astonishingly ignorant, she was asked by Jones' attorney reading from 3x5 cards, and he seemed not to know what was going on either, but I believe this was all by design. Had she ever heard of James Fetzer? She said she had. And who is he? He's a professor, she thinks, at the University of Minnesota. And what did he do about Sandy Hook? Well, he wrote a book about Sandy Hook. What was the title of that book? Oh, I think Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Were there any other contributors? Remember, bearing in mind there were in fact 13, including 6 PhDs. She answered, James Tracy, I think. And then she went on to talk about James Tracy. Now, not long after, they shared with her an email from Paul Joseph Watson to Alex Jones, where Paul Joseph Watson was saying, we got to stay as far away as we can from that batshit crazy Fetzer. They've got to stay as far away as they can. Well, I don't know what was going on there, but I do know I've had a positive feeling about Paul Joseph Watson in the past. And here I'm sharing an article, CBS News censors its own documentary, exposing how 70% of U.S. funding in Ukraine is wasted, announcing we are updating our documentary after pressure. CBS News has sensationally censored its own documentary after the film exposed how only 30% of weapons funded provided by the U.S. makes it to the front lines. A tweet posted by CBS on Friday premiered its new film, Arming Ukraine, by explaining that the documentary explores why much of the billions of dollars of military aid the U.S. is sending to Ukraine doesn't make it to the front lines, like 30% reaches its final destination. In the documentary, experts told CBS they had no idea where the most of the weaponry was going. Here's a tweet about it. CBS News. The new CBS Reports documentary, Arming Ukraine, explains why much of the billions of dollars worth of military aid the U.S. is sending to Ukraine doesn't make it to the front lines. Like 30% of it reaches the final destination. And it says, shows an image. Do we have any sense as to where they're going? Republican lawmakers explained how they felt vindicated by the revelation, having previously opposed a $40 billion Ukraine aid package. This is one of the reasons I voted no, said U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene in response to the CBS report. Flooding a country with advanced weapons can have grave consequences even when done with the best of intentions. CBS description of the documentary read, this CBS Reports documentary goes inside Ukraine to get a first-hand look at how military aid gets from the border to frontline soldiers and explores the difficulties of getting the aid to the fighters who need it. However, the film has now been completely removed from the CBS website with a page not found label in its place. After being bombarded with questions as to why the film was censored over the weekend, CBS finally announced why they had removed it. We removed a tweet promoting our recent doc, Arming Ukraine, which quoted the founder of the nonprofit Blue Yellow, Jonas Oman's assessment in late April, that only around 30% of aid was reaching the front lines in Ukraine, said a tweet. So why in the world should they remove it? Especially since it appears to be true. Since that time, Ullman says delivery has improved. Additionally, the U.S. military has confirmed that defense attaché Brigadier General Gary M. Harmon arrived in Kiev in August for arms control and monitoring. August, that's this month. This is August 8th. We are updating our documentary to reflect this new information and air at a later date. Well, how can that be? You know, in other words, something a little too close to the truth slipped out and CBS News was put under pressure to blacklist it. It's far more likely they censored the film because they broke the unspoken rule that Ukraine must be supported at all costs against Russia because the future of the liberal world order is at stake, Cuomo's Chris Minahan. A mirror of the full documentary can be watched below the BitChute, and I'm going to play part of it.
In the past 2 months, we've moved weapons and equipment to Ukraine at record speed. Drones, grenade launchers, machine guns.
We're seeing this incredible historic flow of weapons coming into Ukraine. Do we have any sense as to where they're going?
We don't know. There is really no information as to where they're going at all.
You know, all this stuff goes with the war, and then kind of like something happens, it kind of like, you know, 30% maybe reaches its final destination.
30%?
Are you concerned about weapons getting in the wrong hands?
I don't care at all whether that happens.
What sort of a unit do you command? Can't say. Okay.
You know, they're like power lords, oligarchs, political players.
One of the biggest targets, Archon, was like this, transporting weapons.
The derailing of this supply run is one of the many ways desperately needed aid doesn't always make it to the soldiers who need it. The U.S. has sent tens of thousands of aircraft and anti-armor systems, artillery rounds, hundreds of artillery systems, switchblade armored drones, and tens of millions of rounds of small arms ammunition. But in a conflict where front lines are scattered and conditions change without warning, not all of those supplies reach their destination. Some also reported weapons are being hoarded, or worse, fear that they are disappearing into the black market, an industry that has thrived under corruption in post-Soviet Ukraine.
I can tell you, unarguably, that on the frontline units, these things are not getting there, all right? Drones, switchblades, IFACs, they're not, right? The armor helmets, you know.
We'll be right back after this break.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, in the absence of Mitchell and callers, I'll just give you further updates about what's going on in relation to Ukraine. Zelensky wants talks with China. He'd like to talk directly with China's President Xi Jinping into pressuring Russia. I don't think there's a chance. This guy who's a comedian and a clown who plays a piano with his penis is going to be impressive to China. China has rather strict value system, much conformity, and they certainly have a low tolerance for transgenders and the like. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky said Thursday he'd like to speak directly with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, as he urged Beijing to use its economic and political leverage to stop the conflict in his country. Not a chance. In an exclusive interview with the South China Morning Post, Zelensky noted he'd not spoken to the Chinese leader since the start of Russia's military offensive in Ukraine. I would like to talk directly. I had one conversation that was a year ago. Since the beginning of the large-scale aggression on February 24th, we have asked officially for a conversation, but we haven't had any conversation with China, even though I believe it would be helpful. According to Zelensky, Xi is one of a handful of world leaders who've been to Ukraine at least once, adding that the Chinese president warmly recalled his ties with Kiev during a call between them last year. Zelensky stressed he wants to see China redefine its stance on Russia, but understand why Beijing is seeking a balanced approach. This is a war on our territory that Russia came to invade. China, as a big and powerful country, could come down hard and sort of put the Russian Federation in a certain place. Of course, I would really like China to review its attitude toward the Russian Federation. I mean, this is just lunatic. This is just lunatic. Russia and China are as tight as they could be now because of the Western sanctions and this absurdity, and this guy is deluded. China has refused to condemn Russia for the Ukraine conflict, has opposed sweeping economic sanctions. The West has slapped on Moscow. Beijing has also blamed NATO expansion for the tensions between Western powers and Russia, adding, the West has to understand Russia's legitimate security concerns and build a sustainable European security system through negotiation. Russia sent troops into Ukraine on February 24th, citing Kiev's failure to implement the Minsk agreements designed to give the regions of Donetsk and Luhansk special status within the Ukrainian state. The protocols, brokered by Germany and France, were first signed in 2014. Former Ukraine President Pyotr Poroshenko has since admitted that Kiev's main goal was to use a ceasefire to buy time and create powerful armed forces. In February 2022, the Kremlin recognized the Donbass republics as independent states and demanded that Ukraine officially declare itself a neutral country that would never join any Western military bloc, in particular NATO. Kiev insists the Russian offensive was completely unprovoked. Meanwhile, Amnesty International is concerned that Volodymyr Zelensky, president of Ukraine, is using men, women, and children as human shields and is guilty of war crimes. Does that surprise anyone? Meanwhile, Zelensky rules out talks if Russia holds referenda. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Sunday if Russia proceeded with referenda in occupied areas of his country on joining Russia, there would be no talks with Ukraine or its international allies. Russian forces and their separatist allies now hold large swaths of territory in eastern Ukraine, Donbass region, and in southern areas after launching what the Kremlin called a special military operation into its neighbor's territory. Officials in both areas have raised the possibility of holding referenda. In his nightly video address, Zelensky said Kiev was holding fast to its position of yielding no territory to Russia. Our country's position remains what it has always been. We'll give up nothing of what is ours. If the occupiers proceed along the path of pseudo-referendums, they will close for themselves any chance of talks with Ukraine in the free world, which the Russian side will clearly need at some point. Russian and Ukraine officials held several sessions of talks soon after Russian forces launched their invasion of Ukraine in February. But little progress was made and no meetings have been held since late March, with each side blaming the other for the halt to contacts. Russian forces hold most of the Kherson region in southern Ukraine, and officials in charge have suggested a referendum on joining Russia could be held within the coming weeks or months. In Donbass, Russian proxies seized chunks of territory in 2014, held independent referenda, and proclaimed People's Republics in the Luhansk and Donetsk region. The Kremlin recognized the republics on the eve of the February invasion. The governor of Luhansk, almost entirely under Russian control for several weeks now, suggested over the weekend Russia was preparing for a new referendum in newly captured areas that was offering residents benefits for taking charge. Now, here we have a wonderful political cartoon where you see kind of a short Putin with no, you know, with a bare chest standing beside a very tall basketball player named Griner. Then you got Biden with a party he's willing to swap, namely Donald Trump. I mean, this is a good one. Meanwhile, U.S. foreign policy continues to be run amok. China tells the U.S. it can't treat other countries like George Floyd and bully and strangle them at will as it severs cooperation with Washington and fires ballistic missiles after Nancy Pelosi's Taiwan trip. China has halted dialogue with U.S. on climate change, military issues, and anti-drug work in retaliation for Pelosi's Taiwan visit. China has sanctioned Pelosi and her immediate family in response to the vicious and provocative actions. Taiwan says multiple Chinese warships and jets crossed the unofficial border on Friday morning. Taipei condemned its evil neighbor China for war games surrounding the island. This comes after Beijing fired 11 ballistic missiles over the island for the first time during military drills held on Thursday. Secretary of State Antony Blinken condemned those missile landings as a serious escalation. The Pentagon ordered the USS Ronald Reagan to stay in the region and monitor the situation. This is all incredibly stupid. I think since Robert Barnes has so many brilliant things to say about it, even if he believes Sandy Hook, shooting was real, and I would like to disabuse him of that. Let's listen to a bit more of what he has to say here. I'll see if I can find a good place to pick it up.
All that nonsense. We still get emails from people who tell us that we're part of the fix and that, you know, we're covering up that Sandy Hook, you know, Sandy Hook happened. It just did. But those people who are going to believe it for deeply emotional, psychological reasons that it didn't. Nothing to do with Alex Jones. Jones was getting bashed with criticism, which the plaintiff's lawyers know from the email disclosures, from a range of people saying that he was covering it up. They started accusing him of being Beau Bridges and real Alex Jones had been taken out the year before, so on and so forth. That collective agitation led him to say, okay, I'll cover this. I'll let people get their two cents as to why they think what they think. And then responded to a couple of questioners sympathetic to those questioners. That's the whole real reality of the case. But that's not the case they're presenting in court. The myth they want to present in court, they can only get away with if all the truth stays hidden. What I didn't realize is YouTube helped him there. So after this suit started, is my understanding, YouTube went in and deleted all the other Sandy Hook videos that would show in live time that Alex Jones had a tiny, tiny, tiny part in anybody questioning Sandy Hook. That 99.9% of it came from other people, including philosophy professors, media professors, school safety experts, people who prior to Sandy Hook had not been off the rails. And again, I think it was, now about half the equation was the psychology of denial. The other, and then this just went viral. The other factor was the politicians in the media chose to politicize this, chose to weaponize only the gun. Only the gun could be responsible. They suppressed evidence. They hid information from Open Records Act. Like, that's what they're not talking about Wolfgang Halbig about. What drove Halbig nuts? He made a bunch of open records requests that they kept denying. That's what led him think, oh, I must be onto something. That's why he thought that, because the politicians were lying. Because the truth of the matter is, politicians lie and kids die. And why did they, how did they lie? They lied about the inadequate means of school safety in those classrooms. If they had been doing their job, if they had been using the taxpayers' money like they were supposed to, a bunch of those kids would not have died that day. That they had to keep secret. So they were glad to hop onto the blame the gun trail and happy to destroy the school, destroy the shooter's home, hide evidence concerning the shooter, hide evidence concerning the school, hide evidence concerning the investigation, hide evidence concerning the safety response. All that did was enhance the conspiracy theories that maybe it didn't happen. That's the truth, but they can't tell that truth because that truth doesn't demonize and destroy Alex Jones. And that's why they are not allowing any of that.
Robert, that is one heck of a it's one heck of an analysis, and it's on point, I think. Just to finish the bookend with Alex Berenson, the one thing that really pisses me off about Alex Berenson's position is that he is now in that position where he says, I think I know everything I need to know about Alex Jones because of what mainstream media told me and big tech told me, and therefore I'm so stubbornly clinging to my understanding of what I think I understand based on a system that I know is corrupt to the core.
It's the same system that tried to destroy him.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why a lot of his donors, aside from what happened with the suit, a lot of them are like, hold on a second. We supported you because a lot of them are people who support Alex Jones. A lot of people don't support Alex Jones, but do support freedom of speech, do support due process of law, do support right to trial by jury, do support the right to confront your accuser, do support the right to present evidence in your defense, all of which he's being denied. I mean, Mike Cernovich, to his credit, came out and said, you know, and Mike Cernovich has been a constitutional lawyer in the past. He's done a bunch of legal work in the past, studied the legal system for, you know, almost a quarter century. He says, I've never seen a trial like this. He says, like, this is the worst travesty of justice. And some people thought I was exaggerating, so they tuned in to watch. And you can only go to Law and Crime. Like, people are wondering, a lot of the people in the live chat and the locals live chat are like, why aren't more of LawTube covering it? It's because the judge has made it clear that that's illegal. The judge even pointed at Alex Jones, you guys aren't permitted to rebroadcast this. She's only allowing it on her YouTube channel and the media people she's approved. And this gives you an idea where the world is going. It's going to be try to hide evidence, even hide a live trial from people. You can't even go to the judge's website and get the prior statements. Now, Law and Crime, you can go and find the opening statements. You can find more of the evidence being kept there. of what's happening in the court proceedings. But they only want it to be law and crime. They don't want the Nick Ricadas of the world broadcasting, because the people who watch this were like, this is terrifying. Like people who have naive beliefs about our judicial system are like, that would be the way. My test always to people is, imagine you're Alex Jones. Do you think this judge is being impartial? Even if you don't like him, don't agree with him. If you were Alex Jones, would you want this judge as your judge? And nobody says yes to that. In fact, most people are like, this is one of the worst judges. Like, is there a way to impeach her? Is there a way to, you know, I mean, there's mostly not a lot of legal remedies available, unfortunately.
And by the way, the trial is worse than anything anyone could possibly imagine. And I'll just say, everyone can go watch it. If you go to, what is it, Travis County, 459th District?
Yeah, I think 459th. And I think she's still taking down the day before. I don't know if she's changed.
Oh, yeah, but she takes it down. She takes it down, like, right within an hour at the end of the day.
And not only that, some stuff's not on camera. So, like, if she wants to do, you can know something's kind of bogus from her. Like, she lectured Owen Scheuer about the rule. This was the misapplication of the rule, in my opinion, by the judge. So the rule for those people out there, but the fact that she had the cameras rolling, medals for the cameras. Because when she's screwing over Jones often on legal issues, cameras, let's cut off those cameras. Some other cameras aren't there for that legal discussion frequently. So the rule is that if you're a witness in the proceeding, they don't want you watching another witness's testimony to contaminate your testimony. That's all it's really for. Because through lawyers and everything else, you know, you can't really avoid anything else. And that didn't happen. Owen didn't see any part of the substance part of the trial. Didn't happen. But because he talked with Alex Jones about Alex's experience, suddenly Alex had not testified at that point in the case. And as a party, he's entitled to, he's not subject to the rule. He can watch the trial. He can be there present. She tried to make a big deal out of it. And the sole goal is she wants the headline the next day. Headline, Judge scolds Owen Jones witness for violating rule.
And the lawyer, no less. She wanted to shame that lawyer in front of everybody.
She likes to personally shame the lawyer. She likes to humiliate him. She's a liberal authoritarian. She's a disgrace of a judge. She has the kind of personality that should never be on a court. She's exactly the opposite of a judicial temperament. She lied to voters to get elected. She said she would always be open and fair and impartial and welcoming in the courtroom. She's been anything but. Anybody can watch this. She calls the jury my jury. People watching are like, how in the world do people like that become judges? Folks in liberal jurisdictions, that's your typical judge. I deal with it. I mean, there's a reason why four judges try to put me in jail. So these kind of judges exist. Unfortunately, they exist too often, too frequently. They're used to their intimidation tactics working on people, like Alex Berenson probably thought is, I'm going to sue you, Barnes, kind of language implication was going to back me off. Have the opposite effect. You know, he learned the Jack Murphy lesson. Trying to intimidate people will not get you the results you want in for some of us. It's a travesty of a trial. The jurors asking questions. In Texas, in criminal cases, the jurors cannot. In civil cases, they can. It's up to the judge. It's always been controversial how that would work. Now, my view is that who's asking the question should be disclosed, because the nature of the question could reveal a bias that they failed to disclose prior to trial that would justify their substitution with an alternate. It appears this judge is not doing that. There are some people that speculated that, how do we know that the judge isn't just writing these questions herself and disguising them as juror questions? I don't know if there's a protocol in place to see whether that's what's happening. But anybody listening to those questions heard biased questions. Questions that had leading answers, questions that showed they'd already come to their conclusion before they even heard any aspect of the defense's own witnesses. Jurors who probably walked into that courtroom with bias, and based on the jury selection process, that was only going to be enhanced. If you knew, if you raised questions about a $100 million verdict, and that turned out to be low, they're actually asking for $150 million, $75 million per person, which when you add it up with the other Connecticut cases, it's basically almost $1 billion in damages they're asking for people who didn't even file a correction request, retraction request, or apology request at the time the statements were made. In fact, to my knowledge, they never did until the eve of suit. And so they're supposed to, you know, get a $75 million. That's the kind of nutty claim. But if you said, hold on a second, maybe $100 million for emotional damages seems kind of high, since, by the way, it would be the highest emotional damages claim in American history for such a case, and my knowledge, world history for such a case, then you're kicked off the jury. if you're like, woo, write that eight-figure, nine-figure check, then you're on the jury. Also, everybody in this jury thought that Alex Jones, that nobody in the media had ever said anything unfair about Alex Jones, ever. That gives you an idea. It's like, this guy, Alex Jones, has been libeled more in the media in the last 4 years than probably any media person not named Donald John Trump. And the and yet, they thought he'd been treated perfectly fairly. So the average Austin juror is a liberal Democrat. In fact, not just the average, about three-quarters of them. So it's a 12-person jury, two alternates sitting. In Texas, you only need 10 to get to a verdict. Chances are 10 jurors are liberal Democratic Biden-voting jurors who hate people like Alex Jones, raising being an independent content creator, an independent voice, challenging institutional narratives, and would love to see, think, hey, like that juror said, this case first, next, anybody who questions the election, we bankrupt them. That's where they're going, folks.
All right, Robert, there were a bunch of questions as to appeals we've talked about before, whether or not the lawyers could have done anything differently is sort of, you know, playing Monday morning quarterback. And I think people can adduce or deduce from everything you've said what counsel could have done or ought to have done or might still be able to do. But everyone needs to understand. Oh, go for it.
Just briefly on the appeals. Problem is his only right of appeal go in Texas. They divide the court of appeal. And they got to reconstitute the Texas courts of appeals. In the Texas court, a lot of states, the court of appeals is for the whole state. Not in Texas. They divide it by geography, which they shouldn't do. Because what happens in any case related to Austin goes to the Austin Court of Appeals, where five of the six judges are liberal Democratic judges, where one of the judges who wrote the bogus constitution-violating opinion early on in the motion to dismiss stage of the case partially leveraged that, platformed it to run for the Supreme Court of Texas. Now she lost, thank God, but that gives you the mindset. So the only place he's got remedy in Texas is the Texas Supreme Court that doesn't have to take the appeal. Two justices of the Texas Supreme Court were interested in taking the case early on, but that wasn't enough votes to have them hear it. Hopefully they step up to the plate, but if enough people in the court of public opinion don't make a stir, they likely won't. And the same is true in Connecticut. All the judges are bad at every level. The only hope is the United States Supreme Court. And once again, and that's also the role Alex Berenson is playing. Alex Berenson is playing the role of in the court of public opinion, saying everything is okay here. I'm a New York Times independent investigative reporter. I covered COVID honestly, so you can trust me. And to prevent Alex Jones from getting a sympathetic ear in the court of public opinion. That's why he's out there pushing his narrative, attacking any of us who defend him. And that's the other goal. I mean, this attack, the moment I appeared and represented Alex for about 6 months or so, I had hit piece after hit piece after hit piece after hit piece. I had a lawyer quit working for me. I had clients turn me down. I knew all that was going to happen. They're like, hold on a second. You represent Alex Jones. I had some famous clients like, I can't hire you right now. It's you know, you're representing Alex Jones. I knew that would happen because that's why they kept all of so many lawyers out from representing all the way through. The goal has been to strip them of every core right and liberty we know is what makes the American justice system unique. And that's why it's such an outrage and it's such a dangerous, perilous precedent. Even if you hate Alex Jones, you should be terrified at what they're doing to him.
We will not be able to end it better than that, or no one will ever be able to say it better than that, Robert. Now let's go from the Alex Jones case where things are not working the way they should, and pivot through someone who said they would get to discovery with big tech but didn't, into a case of someone who's going to get to discovery with big tech.
Somebody who keeps his word, and it's a great...
Let me just call it off since they're turning away from Alex Jones, what I thought you enjoy. I think this guy is quite brilliant. I mean, I'm pretty disturbed that he still thinks that Sandy Hook was a real event. But on the other hand, that would make him perhaps even more important as a witness critiquing the trial, since presumably that makes him more sympathetic to the those who are bringing the suit, the plaintiffs in this case. But, you know, He's a brilliant guy. He doesn't know as much about Sandy Hook as he may believe he does. I'd love to have a conversation with him. I'd even received a suggestion of inviting him on the show. Let me just say, I'll see if there's some way in which I can make contact with Robert Barnes. It would certainly be an interesting conversation. Meanwhile, again, I'm sorry about this. I know Paul tried to call in. Mitchell has told me it would have been perfect. Just think about all those variations in views about Alex Jones and what's going on. I do think he's done a lot of good in terms of scientific reasoning. There are four steps or stages, as I never tire of explaining. Puzzlement, something doesn't add up. He's brought out things not adding up about global warming, you know, the coronavirus, Sandy Hook, a whole host of issues. That's very good. Something doesn't add up, so he invites attention to the issue. Then speculation. He's also good at bringing in a whole host of others. And believe me, speculation is the single most important creative aspect of scientific reasoning. You have to consider the full range of alternative possible explanations. In this case, with regard to Sandy Hook, obviously, that it was a real bona fide shooting versus that it was a staged event, a FEMA drill, for which we even have the manual. And then you have to evaluate the evidence. What's the probability of the available evidence on the hypothesis it was true? If it was a real shooting event, then why should we have a FEMA manual exercise for the very dates that this is supposed to have occurred? Why would we have a sign everyone must check in? Why would we have pizza and bottled water at the firehouse? Why would you have porta potties already in place? Why would you have so many wearing name tags on lanyards? Why would we have parents bringing children to the scene? Why would there be no surge of EMTs into the building? Why would there be no string of ambulances to rush little bodies off to hospitals where they could be said to be dead or alive? Think about it. Think about it, and you figure this out for yourself. Thanks for joining with me today. Sorry we couldn't take your calls. Back on Wednesday.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and the